Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph, Wired to Daniel, lesson 163. In the last lesson, we were in Psalm 83, where we read about the words of the prophet Asaph. He was a temple musician and a priest. And basically, he is writing about the history of Israel and their encounter with their enemies. And that happened several times. It's not that it is one particular time, but there is a one time, one final time fulfillment. And we're seeing it to a degree in our days, and we're going to see more of it toward the end of the age, right before the coming of the Redeemer of Israel. And so in verse 1, as we read, he's saying, "Do not keep silent, O God, do not hold your peace, and do not be still, O God, for behold, your enemies make a tumult, and those who hate you have lifted up, their head." And so he makes it very plain, and in essence, the Holy Spirit that is inspiring him to say these things is basically letting us know how God views it. The people of God are his people, even though sometimes they may not be behaving as they should, and those who turn against them become the enemies of God. And even though God may use those enemies to spank his own nation, still they are the enemies of God. Because when they come, they do not come with the attitude, "Well, we are righteous people," and to begin with, they are not righteous. And they don't say, "We are here to serve, the will of God, and otherwise we wouldn't do it." See? They bring their own hatred and their own emotions and feelings against the people of God, and therefore that's the way they are being viewed, as the enemies of God, the people who hate God, and therefore they hate his people. And that's exactly what God told Abraham, and then later on Isaac, and then Jacob. Those who bless you, and those who bless you, obviously the people who love you, are going to be blessed, and those who curse you, those are going to be the enemies, and obviously they're going to do it out of hatred. They too shall be cursed, and therefore they become the personal enemies of God when they do it. Just like any father who loves his son very much, or his children, and he sees his next-door neighbor, is trying to oppress or afflict or maim or wound or hurt, or maybe even trying to or attempting to kill his own children. Obviously, he's going to regard them as his enemies, even though his children may be kind of kids that may not be behaving themselves now and then. Still, he's going to take it personally. And so that's what he's saying here in verse 3. "They have taken crafty counsel against your people, and consulted against your sheltered ones." And here he's talking about the people that God is hiding, God is protecting, God is defending. And at times, for example, in our day, these were people that God brought out of a horrible captivity in Nazi Germany and other places in the Middle East, where they've been oppressed by the Arabs, among whom they dwelt, who were different nationalities. Some of them were Ishmaelites, others were not. And people look upon them as all the same, but they are not. Arabs means it's a generic name, just like saying Europeans. But then there are different peoples among them. They are not all Ishmaelites. Many of them are, but they are not all. And so God has protected them and brought them out of those lands and brought them into the land of Israel for a purpose. And they don't necessarily behave in the manner that God is pleased. But nevertheless, they are his people. They are not the ones provoking the other nations around them, but it's the other way around. And so this very prophecy is still the same for this day. And so this is what they are saying. In verse 4, they have said, "Come and let us cut them off from being a nation." You see, they want to bring destruction upon them. And their intent in wanting to cut off Israel as being a nation is to totally obliterate them. And so he continues, they say, "Come, let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel," the name of the people, even their very name, may be remembered no more. And that's how hateful they are to the people of God. You see? And they have no respect for them. They have no love for them. They have absolute hatred. A rage, that is in their heart, and therefore they all band together and they're forming confederacy as we read in verse 5, for they have consulted together with one consent, you know, literally with one heart, as you read in Hebrew, with one heart. All of them have the same kind of a heart against the people of God, wanting to totally obliterate them from us. And so they form a confederacy, he says, against you. Wow, they think that they're fighting against a people, a physical people, and yet God is inspiring the prophet to write here that they are actually fighting against God himself. And so when they form a confederacy against God's people, that means that they're forming a confederacy against him, personally. And then he brings us the names of the main players. And who is the first one? The tenth of Edom. You see? Brother Edom. Brother of Jacob. And we know why. We've covered that earlier. And I think in graphic detail to show what Edom and how Edom felt about his brother Jacob. You know, from his own point of view, from his own human point of view, and his carnal point of view also, being, himself dishonest in that manner. He was not an honest person. He blamed Jacob, you know, for taking advantage of him, for exploiting him, for stealing the birthright from him. But he never regards the will of God in the matter, which to begin with was to give it to his brother, and for his brother to have the mastery and the dominion. Of course, he never liked that. Not being a servant of God, not being a man who fears God, you know, he couldn't care less even about his own parents' will. And he didn't respect them in the matter of marriage and who knows how many other things like that, as they should have. So obviously he was not going to give in to the will of God. And so Edom is always in the forefront. And the overwhelming majority, as you read, you know, there are more than 300 scriptures in the Bible that talk about the constant animosities between Edom and the people of Israel, in particular the people of Judah later on, as Israel was taken to captivity. And since to begin with, Edom was along the borders of Judah and not of Israel, so they constantly had problems with them. But then Edom was also in other places where he could also have some friction with Israel, as we shall read later on, because some of them moved up to other areas. And in the days of King David, obviously being a king of all of Israel was involved in the matter. And sometimes Edom would ally himself with the people of Moab and Ammon, which were the children of Lot, and they were alongside the children of Israel. So they would have those animosities there going on back and forth between Israel and Judah, or both of them. And so Edom is placed in the number one position of those in the country against Israel, against the people of God. And depending on whenever the conflagration happened, because those things happened many, many times, several times, not only once, ultimately, we're going to have one final time where all these people, constantly, who have done in the past the same, will again form a confederacy, again, against God's people, thinking that they are their enemies, and therefore they have all the right to go and destroy them without thinking about the God of Israel and his will of the matter. And so we find Edom in the forefront of the battle here, of the confederacy, and also the Ishmaelites. Now Ishmael was, generally speaking, throughout all scripture, not in a position to oppose Israel. He had no reason to do that. They had later on, as time went by, migrated to other places in the east and had their own nations. So that generally they were not on the borders, but now and then they will join the people of Edom, especially those who are closer still to the borders of Edom and Israel. And you remember that Edom married also a daughter of Ishmael. And therefore, obviously, there are going to be some Ishmaelites involved there in the matter. At least the ones who are linked more to Edom, and while the others went their own way. But generally speaking, the tents of Edom were very much involved in, especially in those days, since they were along the border, at least part of them that remained there, because many of them even in those days began to migrate elsewhere. And so we see the Ishmaelites also, and then also Moab, children of Lot, and the Hagarites. Now, who are the Hagarites? They are the children of Hagar. Now, they obviously lived also in the same area, the same territory. And we read later on in the Chronicles, toward the east, toward the, in other words, the wilderness. You might say today part of Jordan, and then part of Iraq, and part of northwest Saudi Arabia. But they were in those territories, and the children of Ephraim, we read in the Chronicles, had a battle with them, a war with them, where they conquered them, and they needed more territory for themselves, and that's the way they did it. Well, anyway, obviously they would have animosities to all the people of God. So those people were in the past, but they're also still around to this very day. That is, their descendants. And so they too are involved in Gibal. Gibal, that's basically speaking about Lebanon. And Gibal, Jabal, in Arabic, means the mountain, people of the mountain. And Lebanon is a mountainous country, especially Mount Hermon. And they've got other mountains there, very high mountains. So that's in essence the way he refers to that territory. And Ammon, of course, brother of Moab, and Amalek. See, Amalek is always there. Amalek is a grandson of Edom, but he's also a grandson of Seir the Horite. So he's not totally Edomite, but he's half Edomite in that sense. But then, being a grandson of Edom, obviously there would be a certain mixture there, an intermarriage. His son goes by with the Edomites, since they were more than the people of Seir the Horite. So he still retains his distinction in that, in one sense, as a Amalekite, a branch of Edom, and also a descendant of Seir the Horite, who merged with Edomites through this marriage of the mother of Amalek and the firstborn of Esau, Eliphaz. And so we read Amalek is also there, and Philistia, the Philistines. And the Philistines were on the other side of where the Edomites were, but the Edomites, being in the south, in the Negev, now and then would inch their way toward the Philistines and would have a relationship with them. And therefore, they too are also involved. And mind you, all these people are still there to this very day. The Philistines are still there, their descendants, in the Gaza Strip, in this whole territory, and they've been there for ages. And so obviously they also get involved, and then you've got all these people up on, in Tyre, he says, and the inhabitants of Tyre. And until you understand history and what was happening, and why the inhabitants of Tyre are also involved in this confederacy, you may not fully comprehend why is it so. But you see, many of the people of Edom moved up toward the territory of Tyre, and even today in modern time you see the Palestinians that were driven from Jordan and earlier from the land that became later on as the land of Israel. Before that was Palestine, and still recognize it as such. And so they were driven up there, but also in the past, in the days of David, when they would conquer those territories all around and subjugate Edom and have them under dominion, many of them would just flee up north. And so they always ended up in those territories, and as a matter of fact, they took over those territories. We'll discuss that more later. And so they too, and to this very day, are still involved in the same confederacy. And then verse 8, something interesting, Assyria also has joined with them, and they helped the children of Lot. Now in the days of old, Assyria was an empire, was up there, in up north, and control those territories, and therefore they had now and then an alliance with the children of Edom, obviously against Israel. And in this day you don't find Assyria in that territory, because the majority of them moved elsewhere into northwestern Europe, Germany, but they also moved east. Not all of them went down there. You find some of them to this very day in nearby territories, be it Iraq, be it Iran, be it northern Syria. You see, that's what Syria means, the short for Assyria. And the ancient name for it is Aram. The biblical terminology is Aram, not Syria. But the Greeks gave it that name. And basically because of what they called the White Syrians, because they were remnants of the Assyrians and also of the other Assyria. And that is a grandson of Abraham, that was called Ashur or Ashurim. And Josephus tells us that the land of Assyria was named after this grandson of Abraham. And so they too now and then are involved with the people, the children of Israel. And to this very day, they're still there. And of course, ultimately speaking, as we understand from Daniel, there's going to be that European power that is going to involve the people of ancient Assyria, who have now become the modern Germans. And they too are going to be involved in that. And when you read in Daniel chapter 11, you read about the armies of the north coming from there. And not only from there, but they also would include the armies that are in local areas in the Middle East that remain behind. They're all two of the same. You see, you have to look at it from the biblical point of view, the way it is described. Because they too are considered still a part of that same empire. And they're going to help the children of Lot. And Daniel 11, you read that some nations are going to be spared in their invasion of the area. And there would be Ammon, Moab, and Edom. For obvious reasons. And so, these are the particular enemies of Israel that have been many times. It's not only a final time, but also, ultimately speaking, at the end time. Still, to this very day, are at it, forming confederacies against the people of God. Now, for 19 centuries, they had no reason to do it in the land, since the Jews were not there. You see, but now that they came back, the same old animosities are still there, with the same confederacies and the same bloodshed and so forth. But still, you see, members of the same nations that have been involved in the past in coming against the people of God. And so to this very day, there are still Edomites there, and Ishmaelites, obviously, and Moabites, you know, people of Jordan, and Ammonites, and Hagarites, and the people of Lebanon, and the Amalekites, still there. Not all of them, but those who are still there are still mentioned. The Philistines are still there, remnants of the Philistines, mixed with others, obviously. And the inhabitants of Tyre are still there. So the area doesn't change in that sense, even though many of them migrated elsewhere, as we shall discuss more of that later. And Assyria, members of Assyria, are still there also. You find them in northern Syria. They are basically the minority that form the elite, you know, the people that are the minority in Syria called the Alevites, of which Assad, you know, the former president that just died recently, is a member. And they are a minority there, and they are in charge. Even though they are less than 10%, they are in charge of the nation. Because that's this is the Assyrian nature, to dominate, not to be the bottom. And so some people don't realize that these are not the genuine Arabs, instead of, in other words, they are not Ishmaelites. And they're not Edomites. They're the people of the former German Empire, you know, that was called in ancient time Assyria. Still around. You find them in Iran also. And you find them in Afghanistan and Pakistan, many other places like that, because they went back east, even some parts of northern India, where anciently they migrated in that direction, because their empire was everywhere. And not everybody migrated back, that is, migrated into the modern nation of Germany. And so we still some of these people in the area involved, and will still be involved in the future. And so when you read about Assyria, you have to understand that too. You know, some people forgot about that because they don't know the history, they don't study, they don't have no context and background as they should, and so they just think in terms only of modern Assyria in Germany, and they forget about all the rest that remain behind. And so this is what the men of God here, the prophet, Asaph, the priest, is inspired by the Holy Spirit to discuss this matter that has been going on for a long, long time. It's not only a recent problem. And so he's saying about this people. Now we have an example of this battle, just one of many, in the book of Chronicles, in the days of King Jehoshaphat. Now King Jehoshaphat was in the south, the kingdom of Judah. And obviously, the people of Edom were alongside the people of Judah, and a part of Moab and Ammon were not far from him. And so now and then, you know, they were at it, having those confederacies against the people of God. And This is what you read in the book of Chronicles, one of those examples. And probably we should go to it now and read it. Just a couple of scriptures here. We read in 20 of 2 Chronicles, actually. It happened after this, in verse 1, that the people of Moab and the people of Ammon and others, later on they are mentioned, who are the others? And obviously some of these players that we just read about, at least some of them. And so there were, it says, and others beside them, that is beside the Ammonites, came to battle against Jehoshaphat. Now, it was a huge, huge army. And he could not do battle and win with all of them, so he turned to God and pleaded with God for help. And so here we read here about his prayer. And in verse 10 we read, and now here are the people of Ammon, Moab, and Mount Seir, whom you would not let the children of Israel invade when they came out of the land of Egypt, because, as God said, I gave them that land. These were, after all, Moab and Ammon, the children of Lot, nephew of Abraham, who was also an adopted son in a way. And so God gave them those lands long ago, and Mount Seir he gave to Esau. You see, as we mentioned earlier, that Esau went in that direction, conquered that territory, emerged with the remnant of the people, and from that particular merger by alliance of marriage, Amalek was the result. But the whole territory was given to Esau, and including all the territories around it, all the way down to the Red Sea. What was it called, the Red Sea? Some people don't realize that. That's because the people of Edom dwelt in the area. You see? All the way down to along the coast of Saudi Arabia to this very day, you still see remnants of Edom over there. And some people don't realize that. Medina, the present Saudi Arabian city, that is one of the holy cities. You know, there is Mecca and then there is Medina. Medina was the capital, among many other places, of the children of Edom that dwelt in that area that became known as the Red Sea, because they were the red people. In other words, the people of Edom. And that's one reason why you see this name among some certain people of to this very day, who still have the same name, Medina. And we're going to discuss that more later. And so these are the people that came against him in particular, in Ammon, Moab, and Mount Seir. And of course there were also others, probably some Ishmaelites and some Amalekites, obviously. All those people now and then oftentimes will be in confederacy against the people of Judah or Israel. And so he says, these are the people that you would not let us destroy when we came out of Egypt. Because you said, you know, I gave that land to them, you're not going to give you one single foot, square foot of that land, so just go around them. And so verse 11, it says, here they are, rewarding us by coming to throw us out of your possession, you know. That's what they're saying. Come, let us destroy them from being a nation, that the name of Israel be no more. And why is that hatred there? Especially on the part of Edom, you see. Well, Edom, because of the birthright. Moab and Ammon had no quarrel with Israel, generally speaking, with the exception of the lands that Moses, you know, while Moses was still there, and Israel conquered the land of the Amorites, and the Moabites, that is the people of Ammon and Moab, considered those lands to be theirs. And yet, at the time, they were not theirs. The people of Sihon and the Amorites, you know, lived in those territories, all the way up north to Mount Hermon, on both sides of the children of Ammon and Moab. And it was Moses, you know, and the armies of Israel that conquered that territory, and God gave them that territory. So that gave the Moabites a bone to pick, you know, with the Israelites because of that land. And we see those wars now and then with them. And they were claiming, like in the days of Jephthah the Gileadite, you know, the judge that delivered Israel out of the children of Moab. And that's in essence what the contention was all about. You know, they say, well, this land is ours. And Jephthah told them, oh no, that's not yours. You know, we went to battle against those kings and God gave it to us. And whatever God gave to us belongs to us. Just like if you went to war and your God, you know, delivered you and gave you, you know, the victory, well, you would take it to yourself. So don't complain about it. Well, that's the reason. Now and then, you know, the children of Ammon and Moab went to war against Israel. In this case, they went against Judah. And Judah was not in that territory, but they did it anyways, of the constant animosity they developed against the people of Israel. And so the Edomites are with them, because the Edomites has the reason of the birthright behind it, of the entirety of the land, that they felt should have been theirs. And so this is what they're saying, you know, let's go, you know, let's have a confederacy and throw them out of, you know, just like today they're still saying the same. You see, let's throw the Jews into the sea. And so he's using that terminology. And so they're rewarding us by coming to throw us out of your possession. It's not even our possession, it is your possession, O God. You gave it to us, which you have given to us to inherit. And so he says, well, God, you judge them, because they're coming against you and against your possession. And God ultimately is going to judge all these people that today are still at it and never give up on that. And so we continue the story now in 1 Samuel in chapter 30. And there we read another account of the story of Amalek, the chief contender for the birthright. And as we read earlier, Amalek was always there in the south, and Amalek now and then would use the same tactics. And to this very day, are using exactly the same tactics. You know, when the children of Israel are not fully aware of what's happening, or when they are in their moment of weakness, like with the children of Israel, you know, he didn't go after the armies of Israel. You see, Amalek at that time, in Exodus 17, he went after the women that were behind, after the sickly people, after, you know, the children. And that's his mode of operation. You know, these are not very brave people, generally speaking, that go to war face to face, you know, against the enemy. But in time of weakness of the enemy, and that's again what they were doing here, the children of Amalek. When David was, at least he was attempting to help the Philistines, as we read in chapter 29 of 1 Samuel, win the battle against King Saul, and it's not personally that he really was going to do it, but he knew that they're going to spurn him anyway. But it was a time when he was pretending to be helping the Philistines, while actually he was not doing that. And so as he went to battle, so to speak, and he was not necessarily going to do battle with his own people or King Saul and the children of Israel, but as he was going with the Philistines there, and finally they told him to go back home, including the king that he was working with. In the meantime, while they were off, and they left their women behind, and the children, and the cattle, and all that, well, here show up the Amalekites. So we see in chapter 30, now it happened when David and his men came to Ziklag, that was the city that was given to him by the king of the Philistines, one of the kings there, Achish. On the third day, that the Amalekites, in other words, while they were away, the Amalekites invaded the south, you know, the south of the Negev, because they were generally in that territory. And they generally, you know, would take advantage of a situation where Israel was not on guard or was away for whatever reason. And here it is, they waited for David and his army to go away, supposedly to help the Philistines. And while they were, that's when they were going to invade the armies of Israel. That means the people who are behind while the armies are gone. And basically, the army of Israel was out there engaged with the battle with the Philistines, with King Saul. And so it was a good occasion for them to go and take over cities where they had no protectors. And that's, unfortunately, is a tragic way in which Amalek always gets involved with the armies of Israel. And to this very day, they're using the same tactics, especially in the past, recent past. And to this very day, whenever they can, you know, the terrorism, until recently, where they had the Intifada, and they are going to continue the same. You know, when Israel is not watching, you know, they sneak in and cause damage. And so they invaded the south of Ziklag, attacked Ziklag, and burned it with fire. They burned the city, and had taken captive the women and those who were there, that is, older people, you know, children, from small to great, and did not kill anyone, but carried them away and went their way. Well, so David, now he's returning, and this is what they see. So David and his men came to the city, and there it was, burned with fire, and their wives, their sons, and their daughters had been taken captive. You see, they were, in essence, defenseless. And that's how Amalek works. It goes against the defenseless people. And obviously, David and his men were extremely upset about it. And we read, David inquired of God, what is he going to do? And so we read in verse 8, so David inquired of the Lord, saying, shall I pursue this troop, that is the Amalekites, shall I overtake them? In other words, are you going to be with me to deliver me? And he answered, you see, God is in contact with David. He says, pursue, for you shall surely overtake them, and without fail recover all. So God, in essence, is also getting involved here in protecting the all the people of David and all the men with him. You see, he made sure that nobody gets harmed, and he's protecting them and putting it in the heart of the Amalekites not to kill any one of them. And so he's going to give him the delivery, or the deliverance and the redemption. And remember, that goes along with the oath that we mentioned earlier in Exodus chapter 17, that God himself swore by his throne that he's going to have a war with Amalek from generation to generation. And this is one reason that we see here for it, because of the cowardice behavior of Amalek and the constant harassment against the people of God. You see, and all for the same reason. Well, Amalek feels that this land is mine and they have no business being here, and whenever I have a chance, I'm going to take advantage of it. And that perpetual animosity remained there and still there to this very day. And so David now goes with his 600 men. Wasn't much of a big army, but big enough with the help of God to do an awful lot of damage to Amalek. And so he goes with the 600 men. And then as it is, some of them were tired, so he left 200 behind, and only 400 of them pursued, crossed over the brook of Besor, that is to the other side. And they were going to pursue the Amalekites. And so they found an Egyptian along the way who told them what really happened, how they did it. And so he's telling them, we made invasion of the southern area of the Keratites. You know, he was one of the servants of the Amalekites, and he got sick, and so they left him behind. Couldn't care less about him. And David rescued him, in essence. And so he told him what happened. And so he said, we made an invasion, you know, we the Amalekites, not himself. We made an invasion of the southern area of the Keratites in the territory which belongs to Judah and the southern area of Caleb, and we burned Ziklag with fire. So while the armies of Israel were out there doing battle, here come the Amalekites taking advantage of the situation, coming after defenseless people. And David said to him, can you take me down to this troop? And so he said, if you protect me, I will. So he swore to him that he will, that he wouldn't turn him in. And he took him, he took him over there. He showed him the way. And so verse 16 read, and when he had brought him down there, there they were, spread out over all the land, eating and drinking and dancing because of all the great spoil which they had taken from the land of the Philistines. You see, even the Philistines were defenseless because the armies were out there doing battle with Israel, and the women and children remained behind, and so that's what they went after. They didn't go necessarily after the Philistines themselves, that is the soldiers, but after their wives and children. And that's the way they always took advantage of people. You know, not too brave people. And so they went after the Philistines and all the land of Judah. And so David attacked them from twilight until the evening of the next day. Now, mind you, he's got only 400 people with him. And yet here there were many of them. And so he attacked them, he said, and he was warring with them until the next day. And he said, and what we read here, the salvation that God gave David was complete. Not a man of them escaped. That is from that party, raiding party. He destroyed all of them, and with exception of 400 young men who rode on camels and fled. So how many thousands he killed, we don't know. And so David recovered all that the Amalekites had carried away, and David rescued his two wives. And nothing of theirs was lacking, either small or great, son or daughters, spoil or anything which they had taken from them, David recovered all. And plus, he took all that they have stolen by invading. Later on in the account, David actually took all the spoil and gave it back. Not to the Philistines, but he gave back to, not that he was interested in the Philistine. He probably let them go back to their own home. But he gave back all the spoil that was taken to all the children of Judah and all the people around there that were taken to captivity. And so you see, Amalek is always very involved against the people of God. And when you understand the background, then you understand why. This is not just, you know, somebody taking advantage of a situation. We're talking about a people that from the beginning of time had an animosity against the people of Israel. And whenever they could, they took advantage of the situation and would come over and butcher and kill and burn, you know. And then they had real serious wars with them. And so this is another encounter we see here. Now, let's go to another account of Amalek. And this is a very famous one in the book of Esther. And mind you, you have to remember what happened in the days of Saul. As Moses told Israel, because of what God said, you know, he swore against Amalek. He reminded them. We read it in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 25, where Moses, expressing the will of God, he told Israel, remember Amalek, remember what he had done to you, never forget them when you have a chance, you know, when you are in your own land, blot them out from under heaven. You see, totally, eliminate them, total genocide. You know, one generation you do it and that's it, they'll never have any problem with them anymore. They haven't done it, you see, they haven't done it as they should have. King Saul didn't do it, he didn't finish the job totally. You see, he just went, you know, and had one battle with them. And even then did not even kill the king, but he allowed, you know, some of them to escape, probably. And not all of them were there anyway. And so they continued going on. While it was his official duty, his sacred duty, to carry on that so-called jihad or holy war against the people that God himself proclaimed a holy war against. From generation to generation, knowing in advance that Israel is not going to do the job one time, and that's it. And so to this very day, this war is going on. Of course, they are not known today as Amalekites, but they are known today as the people who remain behind, at least the ones that remain behind, are known as Palestinians. But not all Palestinians are Amalekites. You see, Amalekites just form one segment of them, and God knows exactly which ones. But they're still there, you know, still using the same tactics. And not all Palestinians, you know, are the same. They're different Palestinians, you know, different nature. Some are more peaceful, some are less. And some you can do, make a deal with others you can't, you see. And so you see that spirit there, the Amalekite spirit. And so King Saul didn't finish the job, he did not kill the king, but you see, Samuel, he destroyed the king of the Amalekites, Agag. Now, Agag was a man that had, in essence, a dynasty, you see. Everyone that was to rise to that office became known as Agag. And so this whole family became known as the Agagite family, you know, the royal family, the royal seed. And so way down the road here, while Judah is in captivity, and the land of Babylon later on became as the land of Persia, we find another episode here of Amalekites that obviously also went in that direction. Because Amalekites did not all remain in the same place, and Edomites did not all remain in the same place. They went elsewhere. And so among other places they went to was present-day Iran. And they're still there to this very day. You see? When you look at the people of Iran, and you see among some of them, not all of them, you see there are a lot of Iranians who are more peaceful, and heaven grey, you know, very much at peace with Israel when the Shah was still there, and also with the people of Northwestern Europe and America. And we've seen in the days of President Carter, you know, direct assault on the children of Israel who are, you know, in modern America. Of course, they don't know that, but you see that animosity that was among some of them, not all of them, but some of them turned against the people that they used to be allied with. obviously not they themselves, but the government. But still, the majority of the people, you know, were not with that attitude. And they took into captivity, you know, that is, they took captive many of the Americans that were there in the embassy and some others, and held them captive for quite a long time. And so you see that animosity there, that, you know, virulent animosity and poisonous one that they have toward the West, especially America. They call it the Great Devil. And particularly they have against Judah. You know, they're so far away from there, and yet they want the total destruction of Israel. And so they're supporting all the terror groups. And probably why the major reason for it, I mean, we do not know completely, perfectly, that, but what we do know that in the past there were Amalekites there, and there is no reason to believe that they're not there yet to this very day. And so, in the days of Mordecai, who was there in that territory, obviously, and all the children of Judah, they were there in captivity. That later on was taken over by the Persians, and they had good relationship, generally speaking, with the king. And some of them were way at the top. Well, here we read this story of the book of Esther. And it's happening there. And guess who is one of the main players there? And so we read in chapter 3 and verse 1, after these things, King Ahasuerus, who promoted, mind you, now he's the husband of Queen Esther, a Jewess, and Mordecai is up there, and before that there was Daniel and his friends and many others that rose to the top. As a matter of fact, even in the days of the Shah, there were a lot of Jews way up there at the top, and an awful lot of the economy was run by them, and then so that you see an awful lot of animosity also on the part of many others against that, and to this very day also. And so here we read, after these things, King Ahasuerus promoted Haman, the son of Hamdata, the Agagite. And what does it mean, the Agagite? Well, he's from the royal seed of Agag. In other words, an Amalekite, you see, that ended up there with others. And he advanced him and set his seat above all the princes who were with him. Now, we all know the story. We read it several times, so we don't need to go through it in particular. What we should notice here is that when it came to the personal contest there for power, so to speak, between him and Mordecai, Haman, when he was very, very angry with Mordecai, because Mordecai is not going to bow down to that Agagite that he knew was an Amalekite. And when Haman, on the other hand, understood who Mordecai was, that he was a Jew, remembering the old animosities, you know, because the king and his people were massacred by the Jews, you know, many generations earlier. And so that hatred is still there in his heart. And he gets so angry with that, and he's filled with wrath, as we read in verse 5, when Haman saw that Mordecai did not bow or pay him homage, Haman was filled with wrath. But he disdained to lay hands on Mordecai alone. See, that's how full of hatred he was. And so we read, for they had told him of the people of Mordecai. And now that he realized, aha, you are one of those Jews, well, I'm coming after you. Not only after you, but after everyone that is a Jew. And so we read, instead, Haman sought to destroy all the Jews who were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus, the people of Mordecai. You see the hatred of the Amalekite there? He has a personal problem here with a certain Jew, but he wants to destroy every single Jew alive in the entirety of the Persian Empire. And he's in that position to do it. He's the prime minister now, with awesome powers. Now, why would a man have such hatred, not just against one man that, you know, from his point of view did him harm or wrong, but also the entirety of his people? And so he wanted utter destruction. And then again, you know, you realize that. When you realize that Haman the Agagite, you know, from that royal line of Amalekites, of Agag the Amalekite, and then you understand what is motivating this man. And there were many other stories. There are a lot of stories even in history of Amalekites that were in other territories and got involved also, again, even though they may not know, but at this time, or that is at that time, they did not know either of their own identity. In other words, they did not necessarily maintain a real conscious knowledge of where they came from. But what they did maintain was a hatred against the people of Israel, who at the time, many of them did not even know who they are. You see, but that hatred continued. And that's a part of history that we may come to later on, as we find out to what other places this Amalekites and Edomites went to. In the days of Mordecai, anyway, the story ended, as many of us have read many times before, with an opposite story. That is, the children of Israel, the children of Judah, the people of Mordecai, utterly destroyed all the Amalekites that rose against them and all the empire. And you can imagine that Amalek never forgot that for generations to come, and to this very day you see that animosity there. Anyway, we're going to stop at this point here and continue next time with Edom. And this is again Mordecai Joseph saying greetings to all of God's people.